This is a Star Trek Strange New Worlds podfic of Between the Darkness and the Light, written by Pike's Girl and read by Cheesecake 3. It's a gen fic and is rated mature for Chris Pike Wump. They find the cell by accident. The facility is built into the rock itself, old mining shafts repurposed as interrogation pits. The tricorders barely penetrate the stone, giving only the faintest life sign trace, a flicker so weak that Spock almost dismisses it as mineral interference. Almost. He stops mid-step, lifts the tricorder again, frowns. "Captain Pike," he says quietly, and the sound of his voice makes the team freeze. Una steps forward. "Where?" Spock doesn't answer. He moves, following the signal like a bloodhound following scent, every step sharpening the reading. They descend, deeper, passing rooms with shackles, racks, and crude stun prods. The air thickens, dusty, stale, tinged with copper. They move faster with every step they take, more urgent, more worried. "What is that smell?" Lyon murmurs. "Low oxygen environment," Spock replies, "and human blood." They find a sealed door carved into the bedrock rather than metal. Not a cell, it's more like a cistern. Zero light leaks from the edges. No viewport, no panel, just a slab of stone covering a hollow. Spock places a hand on the surface. "It is soundproofed." Una's voice goes sharp. "Captain? Chris? Can you hear us?" Silence. Spock presses his ear to the rock. For several seconds, nothing. Then, impossibly faint, the rasp of a breath. "Get this open," Una orders. "Now!" The team works fast. Phaser cuts burn across the rock. As the slab softens and crumbles, a pocket of stale, cold air rushes out, hitting them like a physical force, damp, metallic, suffocating. The light spills in. And Chris recoils. He's curled in the furthest corner, knees drawn up defensively, one arm braced as if he's been shielding his face long before the door opened. The moment the light touches him, his body jerks, violent, instinctive, and he tries to get up, tries to fight, but his legs buckle and his hands skid across the stone with a wet sound that makes Joseph swear under his breath. Chris looks bad. As much as Joseph can observe in that split second, he is in a state worse than he ever saw him. His knuckles are a red mess. His forearms are covered in defensive cuts. His ribs, the way he holds his arms around his chest, speaks volumes about the state they're probably in. Since the phaser incident, they get hurt easily. He can see colourful bruises under the shreds of fabric that was once a uniform, the sickening map of blunt force impacts, were evident that he must have fought until there was nothing left in him to fight with. "Stop! Stop! Back off! Don't!" Chris gasps, throwing one arm up against the light, the other scrabbling for balance. He can't even look at them. His pupils are blown wide, unreactive, swimming in too much light. Una drops to a crouch immediately. "Chris, you're safe. It's us." His breathing is shallow, too shallow. Spock's tricorder hums. "Oxygen saturation is dangerously low." Look at the captain's eyes. His visual cortex is overstimulated. Excessive dilation due to prolonged darkness. "He can't see us," Una murmurs. "Not with this lighting." It hurts him. We hurt him. She switches her light to its lower setting and angles it downwards, letting only a soft glow reach him. Chris's body twitches, calming only slightly. He blinks rapidly, tears forced from raw, strained eyes. "Una," he whispers, voice cracking. "Yes, yes, it's me." She inches forward slowly, careful and deliberate. No sudden moves. "Joseph, what do we do?" Joseph rips a piece of his uniform into a thread of fabric. His retinas haven't seen light in days. "Here, Chris, we can use this as a blindfold so the light won't hurt you. Okay?" Chris shakes his head. "No, I not." It's the only way we can get you out without hurting you further. We need to get you topside. The transporter can't beam us out of here, Joseph tries to explain. They can see how their captain tries to settle his breathing and tries to grasp what is being said, but he is not there completely, not lucid enough to understand everything, but the urgency in Joseph's voice is clear. Finally, Chris nods, hands clawing against the fabric. Joseph wraps around his head. Here. You're safe, Chris. We'll get you out. Slowly, the words reach Chris and his breathing eases by a fraction, and he sags sideways, only catching himself at the last moment with a shaking hand against the floor. Spock's eyes lower. He has been in absolute darkness for a minimum of 48 hours. Sensory deprivation at this level is considered a Class 4 torture method. And the bruising? Una asks. From fighting them, Joseph replies grimly as he scans Pike's ribs. And from them fighting back. Chris gives a choked laugh, dry, humorless. Didn't go. Quietly. I'm gonna get them. Lan swears under her breath, but helps supporting her captain as he tries to stand again. It's his stubborn reflex, his hero complex kicking in, but his legs tremble so violently the attempt ends in collapse. Spock is there before he hits the ground, catching him in a steady, warm grip on the other side. Chris flinches at the touch before recognizing it, fingers curling weakly into Spock's sleeve. Let us help, Spock says gently. You will recover, but for now you must allow us to assist. Una kneels beside him. We've got you. Don't fight us. Let's get you home. Chris presses his forehead into her shoulder, half seeking more darkness, half seeking comfort, and for a moment shakes with effort not to pass out. Joseph empties a hyperspray into his neck. Some painkiller, okay? He whispers, soft but firm. Easy, Chris. We've got you. And for the first time since they opened the stone door, Chris stops, trembling. They lift him, carefully, slowly, and begin the long walk out of the maze of darkness. The moment they cross the threshold into sick bay, the lights, already dimmed for his arrival, are still too much. It hurts through the blindfold. Chris's breath catches like he's been struck. His shoulders jerk upwards, eyes squeezing shut, his whole face tightening against the glare. Computer, drop the lights another 20%, Joseph calls. The room responds instantly, the overhead sliding to a warm, low amber glow. It's barely brighter than a candle, but even that makes Chris wince as he takes off the blindfold, blinking in rapid, painful bursts. He sways, disoriented, forcing one eye to open a slit. It feels like staring into a warp core. That's because your pupils are refusing to constrict, Joseph says, gently guiding him onto the nearest biobed. They've been in permanent dilated state for too long. Your eyes don't know what to do with light yet. Chris huffs something like a laugh, but it dissolves into a shaky exhale as he lowers himself onto the bed. The sensors activate. One of them chirps in alarm. Dehydration, hypoxia, sleep deprivation. Joseph shakes his head. Chris, you don't do anything halfway, do you? Wasn't exactly luxury accommodations, Chris mutters, finally more aware of what happened. Joseph answers by placing a cool palm to his sternum, easing him back against the biobed support. Chris tries to resist, uses a command instinct, saying he should sit up, take charge, prove he's fine. But the moment he shifts, pain blooms sharp and hot under his ribs. He flinches, teeth clenching. Don't, Joseph said. It's soft, but absolute. Chris stays down, surrenders. Now he can. Joseph begins the full scan. The readout is ugly. Chris has bruised and cracked ribs, lacerations on arms and forearms, severe muscle tension along the spine, low-grade tremors from oxygen deprivation, and early signs of acute light reintroduction syndrome. But Joseph lingers longest on the last item. He brushes a thumb beneath Chris's eye, lifting the eyelid slightly. Chris's breath hitches. The sclera is bloodshot. The pupil is huge, glossy, slow to react. Look at that, Joseph murmurs half to himself. They've been in total darkness for too long. The muscles that control focus are practically locked. Chris tries to open his eyes wider, tries to cooperate, but the light creates a stabbing pressure behind the sockets. He grimaces, tears spilling automatically. Hurts, he mutters. Feels wrong, like I'm trying to look at something, but it just keeps sliding away. That's because the lens isn't shifting correctly, Joseph explains, voice steady and warm. Your focal muscles are fatigued. You're going to have trouble with near vision until they recover. Chris groans. So, I'm blind. No, you're injured, Joseph corrects gently. It's only temporary. Then, with a faint smile, he adds, and knowing you, deeply annoying. A little, Chris admits. The more awake he becomes, the more disoriented he seems. His breathing is too shallow, his responses delayed. Joseph can see it, the signs of sensory re-exposure panic. He dims the lights again, slow and gradual. Chris's body relaxes immediately, almost involuntarily. You feeling dizzy? Joseph asks. Chris nods, but the nod becomes a sway, then a flinch, then a hand rising instinctively to protect his face from a phantom threat. Joseph catches his wrist midair. Hey, he says softly. Nothing's coming at you. You're safe. Chris swallows hard. Cell door opened like that. Right. Couldn't see what was coming in or what they were carrying. So that's what the light reminds him of. Joseph lowers Chris's hand to his chest and places his own over it. You're not there, he says. You're here with me, and I'm not going anywhere. Chris's breathing evens out, barely, but enough. Joseph reaches into a drawer and pulls out an old-fashioned pair of tinted lenses, sleek, minimalistic. Medical issue. Here, he says. Try these. Chris lifts his head a fraction. Glasses? Temporary, Joseph says. The tint will reduce the light sensitivity. The prescription will help your near vision until your ciliary muscles recover. Chris scoffs weakly. Should I get a cardigan too? Complete the ancient Earth professor look? Joseph smirks. You joke now, but put them on. Chris does, reluctantly, slowly. And the moment they settle on his face, he exhales. Shoulders dropping, jaw unclenching. He blinks. Oh, Joseph raises an eyebrow. Better? Chris nods, surprised. Much. Everything's still a little unfocused, but it doesn't hurt anymore. Not that much. Good, Joseph replies. That's what they're for. Una enters quietly, taking in the dim lighting and the glasses perched on Chris's nose. She pauses. Then she can't help it. Captain, you look distinguished. Chris groans. Don't you start. Spock appears behind her. Doctor, please record that his near vision impairment is not life-threatening, but he will need time to adjust and recuperate. This will be relevant when he inevitably claims he can return to duty tomorrow. Chris mutters under the blanket. Damn, Vulcans. Spock arches a brow. Indeed. Joseph smiles as he adjusts the monitors. Get some rest, Chris. Spock is correct. You're not going anywhere for at least several days. Chris sinks deeper into the pillow, glasses still on, breathing finally smooth and steady. Okay, but just keep the lights low, he murmurs. We will, Joseph promises. And for the first time since they pulled him from the darkness, Chris sleeps and dreams. The walls press in around him, cold and unyielding. His knees dig into the stone floor. Fists clench instinctively. Darkness so complete it seems alive, crawling beneath his skin, echoing every breath, every heartbeat. He moves, trying to find space, trying to stretch. But the shadows cling, suffocating. He swings blindly, kicks, throws himself at everything and nothing. The pain blooms anyway, ribs bruised, knuckles split, shoulders screaming as he is beaten again and again by beings that are used to the darkness, who are able to see him. He thinks of light. The thought alone makes his eyes ache. Pupils dilate, straining, screaming. He knows the first sound of brightness will burn him like fire. Breath catches, chest tightens. Darkness is everything. He is nothing. A soft shift of air. A boot step. A fingertip tapping the wall control. The sick bay lights jump from a low amber to full brilliance. It lasts less than half a second, but through the tinted lenses it hits him like a weapon. Chris jolts upright with a strangled gasp. The bed isn't a bed, it's stone. It's cold, it's the floor of the cell. The brightness sears across his vision, washing out everything, turning the room into a white void that feels exactly like punishment. His heart whiplashes into a sprint. Breath punches out of him. His hands fly up in the front of his face as if expecting another blow. His ribs seize, every bruise igniting at once. He can't see. He can't breathe. The dream hasn't ended. It has followed him. Chris. Joseph is there instantly, voice low, steady, grounding. Chris, look at me. You're here. You're safe. But Chris flinches at the sound, chest jerking with a silent sob he doesn't even recognize as his own. The afterimage of the light burns behind his eyelids, and the memory of darkness claws up his spine. His glasses slip down his nose, and he shakes, one hand scrambling for something, anything solid. The lights dim again. The room steadies. But Chris doesn't. Joseph cups the back of his neck, warm and certain. It was just a flicker, he murmurs. Just sick bay, not there. Stay with me. Chris's breathing stutters, caught between the cell and the present, the dream still wrapped tight around his ribs. He swallows hard. And finally, he feels the bio bed beneath him again. It doesn't happen quickly. Nothing about his recovery does. But in time, with careful adjustments from Joseph, Chris starts walking the corridors again. At first, it's only a few metres outside sick bay, a slow shuffle with one hand trailing the wall so he doesn't stumble when his vision wavers. The overhead lights, even dimmed to a morning glow, make his pupils tighten behind the tinted lenses. He breathes through it, waiting for the ache to settle. By the third day, he can make it to the turbo lift. He still flinches when the doors whoosh open and the interior brightens just a fraction too much, but he forces himself to stay, to stand, to breathe. A week later, he's moving through the ship again, not like before, nothing close to his usual sure-footed, easy stride, but he walks. Crew members turn their heads as he passes, trying not to stare. The dark glasses throw everyone for a moment. Captain Pike never wears eyewear, never has needed to. Now they sit on him like something foreign, a medical necessity he's clearly trying hard not to resent. And underneath the lenses, his eyes still water if someone turns too quickly and catches him with a reflection from a console. He still pauses before entering the bridge, waiting for the adaptive filters to lower the brightness for him. He still swallows carefully when a sudden flare of light makes his stomach twist with leftover fear. But he's coping, moving, recovering. Joseph watches him from a distance whenever he can steal a moment, always close enough to intervene if Chris stumbles, far enough to give him the dignity of walking on his own, and every time the lights hit Chris a little less sharply, every time his body doesn't jolt at the brightness spike, Joseph's shoulders drop with barely concealed relief. Chris pretends not to notice. Or maybe he really is focusing that hard on his breathing, his steps, the weight of the glasses resting on the bridge of his nose, because he still needs them. And somehow he starts to like them. His eyes aren't ready for the ship's full lighting yet. The muscles behind them tire too easily. The dilated pupils take too long to respond. The slightest glare sends a low pulse of pain down his temples. But the darkness doesn't own him anymore. He can face light, carefully, slowly, a little more every day. For now, the glasses are a part of him, a shield, a reminder, a promise that his vision will heal, and that the darkness he survived doesn't get to follow him forever. And he likes them. They ground him in a way. He almost wishes to keep them once this thing with his eyes has passed. And when he walks into the mess hall one morning, glasses on, posture steady, a soft hum of conversation breaks out. He just gives them all a tired, crooked smile. "Morning," he says, and it almost feels normal. Chris strolls down the corridor, the tinted lenses perched on the bridge of his nose, glasses reflecting the soft glow of the ship's lights. He's cautious, yes, still sensitive to brightness, but his gait has the familiar confidence of the captain, just slightly tempered by recovery. The crew has noticed. From the moment he stepped out of sick bay, they couldn't help themselves. The glasses aren't just medical, they're magnetic. Something about the way the lenses frame his face, the sharp line of his jaw, the smouldering intensity of his gaze, it's distracting in the best way. "Morning, Captain," Erica says, tilting her head slightly, hiding a grin behind a data pad. "Those glasses suit you." Chris blinks behind the tinted lenses, surprised. "Suit me?" He half smiles, a little crookedly. "I'm trying not to look like I just crawled out of a cave." "You pulled it off," she said, voice teasing. "Adorable and terrifying all at once." Even Spock, standing nearby with arms folded, lifts a brow. "It is a logical adaptation. The glasses reduce light stress and complement the symmetry of your facial features." Chris lets out a short laugh, adjusting the glasses self-consciously. "Complement my features, huh?" "Yes," Spock replies flatly, but the corner of his mouth twitches ever so slightly. Joseph, trailing just behind, shakes his head with a fond smirk. "See, you've got admirers everywhere. And yes, they do make you look good. Don't argue." Chris rolls his eyes, but he can't suppress the small smile tugging at his lips. There's a little fire in his chest, not from vanity exactly, but from the feeling of being noticed, of being seen again after weeks of darkness and pain. As he walks past the turbo lift, the crew lets small comments float behind him. "Looking sharp, sir?" "Those glasses are very you." "Captain, I..." Chris catches Joseph's hand briefly, tugging him into step. "Enough praise for now," he mutters, playful but warm. Joseph leans close, voice just above a whisper. "I disagree. You look dangerously handsome. And yes, those glasses make you look even more distracting." Chris smirks, head tilting slightly, glasses sliding down just enough to peek at him with one eye. "I'll take that as a compliment." For the first time in weeks, the glasses don't feel like a shield. They feel like part of him, part of the captain everyone respects, admires, and maybe, just maybe, finds a little irresistible. And Chris, walking down the corridor with the crew's quiet admiration buzzing around him, allows him to enjoy it. The end.